Good morning, everyone, and Happy New Year to everybody. I just want to tell you all how really touched and thrilled I am to be here with all of you today. It's, of course, particularly poignant because it is the first week, as Ekavir pointed out, and it just strikes me that in order to be able to live in terms of any of these really profound teachings, this reading today is so profound. It takes many things, of course, but one of those many things, one of the crucial ingredients, is community like this. It's people really dedicated to making the effort to be here. And of course, it's no accident that we're all here. I was thinking yesterday that anybody who shows up here today, anybody, is drawn here by the vibration of these masters. We may know that, we may not know that. We may think we're here because a husband or a wife dragged us, or a friend, or because we knew we would feel guilty if we didn't, or we better start the new year outright. Whatever it is, but the absolute truth is God had his hand in that. And he had his hand in that through these masters, or you would be somewhere else at another Sunday service. So we're all connected like the beads on a necklace that our Gita reading refers to today. And I just wanted to stop for a moment, or start in this moment, by honoring that and recognizing that and just offering us all the inspiration to keep seeking as we're seeking this morning, to hold this up as something that we'll do throughout 2016, every day to the best of our ability, whatever that is. Yesterday, I was on my way up here to help lead our family service. And I just turned on the radio, which is really unusual on my way to anything at the church, but I tuned into KCBS has a program. I rarely listen to it, but it's called In Depth. Maybe some of you know. And the woman who does the interviewing is Jane McMillan, and she does a little bit of a better job at interviewing than most interviewers do. She actually gives the person time to respond, and you actually get the feeling that she wants them to show the audience her best. So it was very delightful. Well, it turns out that the woman who was being interviewed is a woman whose name is Dr. Deborah Cohan. I'm sorry, I'd never heard of her. Maybe some of you have. She's an OBGYN doctor up in San Francisco. She actually does really remarkable work. She works exclusively with women who are pregnant who have been infected with the HIV virus. And she's just been enormously successful and generous and giving. I'd never heard of her till yesterday. But she started all of these medical societies specifically for these women, and she's created safe places for them in San Francisco and really gave a lot of wonderful data, which was all so uplifting, about how since we've discovered so many drugs to treat HIV that it's been, I think, 7 years since a baby's been born with HIV, who's born to an HIV-infected mother, which is just a miracle in and of itself. But that's not why she was being interviewed. She was being interviewed because in 2013, she was diagnosed with a rather aggressive breast cancer at the age of 44. And whether it was medically necessary or it was her choice, she was about to have a bilateral mastectomy. She was going to have both of her breasts removed because of the cancer. 44-year-old doctor, has two children. The youngest was 3 years old. And she realized that it was really important for her to go into that operating room filled with joy. Those were her words. I needed to be in joy, she said. So this very well-known physician who's having her surgery in San Francisco says to her surgeon and the anesthesiologist, I want to dance in the operating room before my surgery. Now, I don't know how many of you have ever seen the inside of an operating room, but take my word for this. It's a very serious place. You walk around like this, you can't touch anything, you can't breathe, you're holding your hands up for people to put them into gloves. One person touches anything, the whole scrub scene starts over, and everybody looks at you. Not a good thing. You were really on your best behavior in an operating room. She's an obstetrician. She's been in an operating room. But she said, I knew. She's a dancer. She's a woman who's danced professionally and who dances, takes a lot of dance classes. She said, there is a way that God has allowed me to find joy through dance. This is how I touch the divine. And she said, I needed to dance. To go through this surgery and to be healed, I needed to be, her words, in joy. She said, but I didn't know, was anybody going to join me? Would I be dancing around the operating room by myself? So she says to her surgeon, this is what I'd like to do. He says, fine with me, as long as you don't ask me to dance. Well, unbeknownst to her, the anesthesiologist, who also was not dancing, and you probably know they sit usually near the head of the person who's laying down to have surgery, videos the whole thing. So there is Deborah, big curly hair, you know, lean dancer, very good dancer. She brings in music. She's in her little hospital gowns. If anybody's ever been in a hospital gown, oh man, you got to have a really strong ego to do that. You don't know what part of you is going to be hanging out of that gown. And they put on music that she had brought in, not our music, but music that inspired her. And she starts dancing with her little cap and her little booties, and she just starts dancing. And before you know it, there are 15 or 16 people in this operating room, everybody dancing, holding their hands up, but dancing. And you could just see her leave her body. You could see her move into this place of ecstasy. It was so beautiful to watch. Well, I watched it because when I got home from this talk, I immediately looked it up on YouTube, because what struck me was this. Now, this is all before I've seen her, but I got so carried away with how charming she was and what a scene it was, I had to share it with you. But she said, so she didn't know the anesthesiologist was video recording it. He hands it off to somebody. And the other thing is, she had sent this music to friends all over the world and asked all of her friends to be dancing to this music right at the same moment. So people all over the world are dancing for her with the intention, she said, of finding joy. Well, she's still asleep on the operating room table, and this thing is on YouTube, and it's gone viral. Within an hour, there's a million hits. A million hits. Jane says, I think we can call that viral. It spread like a virus. Now there's been more than 8 million hits. Jane said to her, why do you think that happened? And she said, Dr. Cohan said, she said, it's inexplicable, but here's what I know must have happened. She said, this music took me into pure joy. And she said, the only way that everybody around the whole world could have felt so connected to me, because it was obvious they did. Now all the videos of everybody dancing are all over YouTube. She said, it's because they touched in to their joy. She said, that wasn't me. That was something that was already in them. That is the place that we are all connected. She said, we can't talk about it. We can't explain it. We could never analyze it, all the things we've said here many times. She said, people touched into joy, and around the world we were connected. And then I went home, and I read the reading for today, and I thought, she was describing an experience of beads on the thread of divine consciousness. That's what she was doing. And she was saying with incredible clarity, there's only one way to get there, and that is to find the divine within yourself. And that is how we are all connected. Now, she didn't go on to explain the rest of the reading, but it was so beautiful to me that that happened, that she knew that people all over the world could have that experience, and that it was handed to me. It's a delightful YouTube. I encourage you all to go and watch The Dancing Doctor, she's called. Really quite lovely. So then we come back to this reading, which is, as I said, not only profound, but I'm going to read it again because I know how hard it is to remember the reading when you're out there. But I'm only going to read the quote from the Bible that says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. And St. John goes on to say later, and the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. Well, I have to say, when you get done with that reading, you feel a little bit like the darkness, don't you? What does that all mean? Those words are very difficult, if not impossible, to understand. I was reminded when I read this that I didn't grow up with this Bible. I grew up with, I was born and raised Jewish. So my version of this was Genesis. So I went back on the internet last night and I read the opening lines of Genesis. It wouldn't have made any more sense to me than this would have. If I were left on my own to try and understand that, how many of us can say we would have known what that meant? Genesis says, in the beginning, God created heaven and earth, and the earth was without form and void. Well, what did he just create? And darkness was on the face of the deep. And it goes on. And I think, I never understood that. I didn't remember that I didn't understand it, but there's no way that I understood that. And I came to that realization that I've had before about the extraordinary blessing of being on this path, the amazing gift that we were given to have a true avatar, somebody who had had the experience that Master had in this reading, to even think to ask, what is behind this experience of closed eyes? What is behind the darkness? What is informing everything? What is this light? That's what Master asked when he sat on his bed. And then years later, comes over here and lays it all out for us, for the many of us here through Swami Kriyananda, but takes these incredibly subtle mystical teachings and puts them into a language that we can all understand. He takes this amazingly simple words, and he creates analogies and allegories and images for us. So Yogananda talked about a wave and how it appears so separate from the ocean, but how it's not at all separate, and as soon as it comes down, it once again is a part of the whole. It always was a part of the whole. It was just this illusion of being separate. We all know this. He talks a lot about movies and the interplay of light and dark and shadows and what it makes the movies look like. How many times have I hidden from the next scene in a movie? And Barry will say to me, honey, it's just a movie. You're not going to convince me of that then. I don't want to see what's coming next. It looks so real. And Master gave us, in not just those simple words, but with amazing crystal clarity, he allows us to come back and to take this reading and to really begin, if we're willing to listen, if we're willing to listen and not do. I had this image this morning of what little kids do when they don't want to hear something. They go, na 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 na, and they just make so much noise that they cannot hear what you're trying to tell them. And I thought, that's what we do in our lives. We make so much noise that it doesn't always look like noise in a way of sound, but so many distractions, so much going on that we cannot hear, really, I would say, the word. Now, the word here does not mean, of course, words. There were no words when that was being conceived of. There wasn't a Bible. It's not about the stories or the teachings or the understanding. No, Master came and he said, there was consciousness. That is what existed. And as that consciousness was set into vibration, not even just movement, but vibration, because when something vibrates, there's a center. There's a place of the title of this talk. I'm not sure if Ekavir read it, but the first part of the title is called The Heart of Silence. That place right in our very center, which is pure peace, pure silence, pure joy, pure love. But when you vibrate this way and that way and this way and that way, that vibration creates light and it creates sound. It's a wordless sound, but it creates sound. And that sound, which is the word, we call Om. But how is it that every religion, every great teacher has a word for that? In the Bible, it's amen. It's amin. It's, I looked it up last night, many, many words for hearing that sound. Because that's something else that Master showed us, without a doubt, is that all great teachers, at the essence of their teachings, we're saying the same thing. And every teacher who has had this true experience of the divine has heard this sound. It doesn't just exist for us. It didn't just exist for Master. You don't have to be Jewish or Christian, or it doesn't matter what you call it. You have to learn how to be. You have to be willing to begin that search for this consciousness, this vibration, which is then the manifestation of the divine. You have to know that that informs everything. The word wasn't just of God. It didn't just emanate from him. It is him. So nothing that we know, nothing exists that isn't him. We are all beads on the thread of his consciousness. It is impossible to be anything else, because in the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was God. And we now, because of Master, many of us, and we hear it in his talks, in his music, in Swami's music, in their poems. I'm going to read you part of a poem in a couple of minutes. In everything they've written or said, we now get to know that that consciousness is informed, intelligent, it's creative by its very nature. Look at all of what it created. Look at all of us. And it is loving. Above all, it is loving. And the more we're willing to open to that and have an experience of it, the more we realize that we are all a part of everything. Otherwise, they're just words. But this is what happens when we keep opening to them. We keep having experiences that we call miracles, except after enough of them, they quit feeling like miracles and they feel more like the truth, and that we are on the path to find that truth. That the subtle reality of God's consciousness is what makes and forms the seeming reality. That we're lost out here in this world of our senses. We think that what we see, what we taste, what we smell, what we can acquire is what it is. And we forget about what created our senses and all that is. We get stuck in matter. We don't think about or experience, live with the divine experience of what created the matter. So, how do we do that? It is so hard to tame the mind. Krishna says to Arjuna somewhere else in the Bhagavad Gita, taming the mind is harder than taming the wind, he says. Now that's a great image for us. Of course, there's other meanings to the wind in the Gita, but it gives you an idea of the challenge that we're up against. Anyway, it's hard. How do we do it? How do we begin? I saw a talk a long time ago where Jyotish up at Ananda Village, Naiswami Jyotish, at the beginning of his talk, he played Master reading his poem, the way Master reads it, God, Christ, Guru. We often hear it sung here as God, God, God. At 10:30 last night, I almost called Sai Ganesh and said, can you be ready to sing it in the morning? But I decided not to. And I'm not going to read you the whole poem, but I want you to hear this extraordinary gift that Master gave us. And again, it's poignant. It's New Year's. It's just after New Year's Eve. We're all out there making New Year's resolutions. When Jyotish gave this talk, he said, make it your resolution to read this poem over and over and over and to memorize it. Now, he starts the poem by saying, from the depths of slumber, as I ascend the spiral staircase of wakefulness. So the whole poem is teaching us how to move up our astral spine and make our way to the point between the eyebrows where we know without a doubt that everything is God's consciousness, that everything is divine consciousness made manifest. To see God everywhere, just as Biraj in his second chant today, blind eyes see the Ma, hiding everywhere. Sri Ram Prasad says, my mother everywhere stays. Those are teachings, but they're affirmations. Now Master says, I'm going to give you this poem. And if you will do something as simple as repeating these words, even if we can't read the poem every day, that actually would be a lot. But if you repeat the refrain every day, God, Christ, Guru, whenever you're in trouble, whenever anything comes up, the lines in his poem, no matter where I go, the spotlight of my mind will ever keep turning on thee, God, Christ, Guru. And he says, in the battle din of activity, when boisterous storms of trials shriek, worries howl, every night in time of deepest sleep, waking, eating, working, meditating, dreaming, sleeping, serving, meditating, chanting, divinely loving, God, Christ, Guru. Just say those words. What is he saying to us? He's saying in this poem, you can't think of anything I haven't thought of. I'm telling you, in every situation of your life, every situation, in the joyful moments, in the painful moments, in the challenging moments, keep coming back to it. God, Christ, Guru. I saw a patient yesterday. She's really suffering and struggling. And literally, as I was ushering her out, many minutes after the appointment was actually over, she was saying, but just tell me something. Tell me, when I get these words in my mind that I'm just not a good person, what do I do? I said, you say God, God, God. And she said, no, no, but like, what do I do to make it go? You say God, God, God. Why? Because God, Christ, Guru, it has the vibration of God in it. We don't have to understand it. We don't have to have the answers to our problems. All we need to do is remember. And what a perfect, this is why I'm choosing to tell you that Master read God, Christ, Guru, because there is God, infinite consciousness. There is Christ, as in Christ consciousness, that first vibration of the divine appearing, sort of coming into a form. Christ appeared, but not in St. John as the Son of Man, but as the Son of God with that consciousness. And then Guru, a physical manifestation of the divine. What is a guru? It is God's love in physical form. Come to us. That's what Yogananda did. That's what a guru is. What else would we say but God, Christ, Guru? That beautiful, beautiful line from our festival, which we'll hear very soon. Willingly to embrace limitation, pain, and death for the salvation of mankind. What an extraordinary statement of love. And another one in another poem of Master's. Master left us with these poems so we can remember we are loved. There is a physical manifestation of God's love that came right here for us. In his poem, God's Boatman, this line, oh, he says, I will come back again and again, crossing a million crags of suffering, with bleeding feet I will come. If need be, a trillion times, as long as I know that one stray brother is left behind. Where will you find love like that here? That is so beautiful that we are loved like that. That we are loved and it's right there waiting for us through the word, through the chanting of Om. It's so impossible to say what Om is. It's all of this. It's everything. It's waiting for us to get right in the middle of it and feel those beautiful arms wrapped around us. Every Sunday morning, we come up here, we kneel before these masters, and we say, I seek purification by the grace of God. And what does God say back to us? Open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. Do you hear how simple it is? Just love him back. And if you don't know what that means, and literally, I really got this yesterday. All I need to do, you see, we really do teach best that which we need to learn. Because I was saying it yesterday morning at 11:30. God, God, God. No, 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 but fix it. How do I fix it? God. God, God, and maybe even better, the way Master brought it to us. Just remember three words. Just start here. What an amazing way to start the new year. God, Christ, Guru.